Jersey.
Yeah.
Looks like they back for a fifth season, man.
Who that?
Sports Roundtable.
Who?
SRT Crew.
Whoa.
SRT. Yeah. They got that realness flowing in they DNA. Damn you lame if you ain't tuned to SRT today. H.O. got that payload when he say so. What you betting on?
Okay.
Don't get mad at me on fantasy. Break up Kyrie LeBron.
Oh, no.
I be smooth as sports superhero Hancock in the mix. Deal with roll tide forever. Real talk, you know who he gon' pick.
See where I be with SRT. Behind the glass, that G-Money.
They
win strong. I never lose. Six man elite, that's Jay Smooth.
All you other sports radio shows, it's fake news. Believe it. Turn up your radios, cause it's time for SRT Radio.
Yeah.
What up, what up, what up? It's Sports Roundtable, live from the SRT studios overlooking Atlantic Station. Happy New Year's. Happy 2018. First show of the year, and I am stuffed up. Bear with me if you can, because nothing can keep me down. And we are up in here, SRT crew in the building, Sports Roundtable doing our thing as usual. Got a banging show for you tonight. I am your humble host, H.O. from Bankhead. If you want to join the show, 404-603-8770. Got my main man from the M Town. Sports superhero Hancock is in the building.
Big homie, what's up, man?
Ain't nothing shaking, man.
2018. Man, does that sound crazy?
Well, if I can play that number and hit, it won't sound too crazy.
But I was just thinking back, man, to the first year I can remember being on this earth, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, that's...
And big events that that may have happened during that time, and you know, I always tell you, my life now has become history. You know what I'm saying? It used to be like, man, that's so far back, man. That's history.
Yeah,
but now,
yeah,
man, I remember, you know, like seeing Michael Jackson and Jackson 5 on Ed Sullivan's show in '69. Now it's 2018.
Exactly.
And that's crazy, man.
Yeah, there it is. History,
man.
Hancock got them stories for you.
It's deep.
Talking about them Jackson 5.
Jackson 5, moon landings.
Yes,
sir. Like that, man. It's crazy.
Wearing them bell bottoms. Wiley.
Boy, you don't know? People don't even know who the hell Ed Sullivan is.
Yeah, I know. Oh, boy. All right. And of course, behind the glass, G-Money.
Yo.
Happy New Year to you, sir.
Happy New Year to you too, man.
See money.
Yeah, man. Waiting on my main man, D. Will. He running t-shirts up the highway. Hopefully he gets in. But,
get in safe, Weezy.
Yeah, but...
I hope he has my t-shirts.
Yeah, I know, right?
I did order some. So.
There you go. We got a hot show for you tonight. And actually, we go... You remember when we talked about the James Harrison... signing, you know, obviously everybody remember, you know, because G made a video for it. Who would tell him? But now we'll tell you why New England actually signed him.
Got some inside information.
Well, it's not inside, it's just research.
Just research.
Okay. We'll tell you why New England signed James Harrison.
Cut out all the speculation.
Yeah, because
tell what it is.
Yeah, and then we're gonna talk some little Belichick news, you know.
Okay.
Some Belichick and Kraft not really seeing eye to eye on some things.
Yeah,
allegedly.
Been hearing a little something.
You know what I'm saying? So we got some hot news coming up. Also, we're gonna break down this college football weekend, the championship, the semifinal games, the playoffs games, things of that nature. And then we got the wild card weekend coming up in the NFL. We definitely gonna talk about that. Coming up. So follow us on social media at SRT Radio. And please go to the website srtradio.com to listen live. And we got my main man DW coming up around 7:30 with the Falcon Report. So if you got any questions you want to ask, please send them to me, Facebook Live or whatever the case may be. let's hear the questions and we'll take it from there. We got them coming on around 7:30. With that being said, G, let's go ahead and hop into this hot news.
Blazing. Hot. Scorching. Red hot.
This is why I'm hot.
It's the Sports Roundtable Hot News.
Hot News sponsored by our friends over at the Big Easy Grill. You're looking for the best New Orleans seafood in town. Please go on over to our friends at the Big Easy Grill, 1193 Collier Road, Atlanta, Georgia. The best shrimp in town. It is verified. Best po' boy in town is also verified. And crab claws are awesome as well. Please go to BigEasyGrill.com. And the first question. This kind of feeds into something that you previously talked about within the last couple of weeks. Are you surprised the UCF beat Auburn?
I guess I could say I was, but, you know, looking back at these type of games, the underdog in these situations has everything to gain, and the favorite has everything to lose, actually. When you look at this situation, we've seen Utah upset Alabama, actually. We saw Boise State upset Oklahoma. And now we've seen Auburn lose to a UCF team. Now, these teams, don't get me wrong, I think they're good football teams. But the problem is that the big schools really have bigger aspirations to play against bigger teams in more meaningful bowl games.
Right.
So it's kind of hard for them to get themselves prepared to get up and play these guys. And I think they come in with a little, you know, less than enthusiastic, you know, temperament, and they get caught. And I think that's what happened with Auburn. Before they knew it, they were in a ball game.
Right.
They turned it up, went ahead by 7, but still just didn't have enough to really push UCF down. Now, back to what you were alluding to in the beginning when you were talking about what I had been talking about. I think, yes, it does kind of give you a little headwind or whatever, if you want to call it, to say, well, this might be a chance for the small schools to get that extra bid that I was talking about.
Right.
To go, if you expand to 8 teams, you'll have 2 at-large wild card bids for the other group of 5 people, mm-hmm. and then have that, I'm sorry, not group of 5, but the big conference, the Power 5.
Right, Power 5.
And then have 1 group of 5 at-large bid, which will round out the 8 teams. And I think it's something that you look forward to. If nothing else, it'll give that small school something to shoot for, and it gives a team that finishes number 1 a little leg up. Instead of giving them a bye, you give them the lesser competition, supposedly.
Right.
So I think it could help.
Now, by them beating Auburn, some would say it gives them a whole lot of leverage to make this the case. But as you alluded to, I mean, come on, Auburn had already lost their luster.
Exactly.
I mean, you know, they didn't really have nothing to play for.
And we've seen it before. Like I said, in those previous games, right. I agree with you.
Yeah, so I mean, you know, so it's I would tell people to kind of temper.
Bump the brakes.
Yeah, temper that, you know, real quick, because I mean that's kind of a
it's gonna give it a little fire, but I don't know if it's going to push the powers that be to do anything.
I agree. You know, I mean, UCF had everything to play for, the undefeated season and everything.
Exactly.
So, you know, and we'll talk about more about that coming up in other news. All right, so thoughts about an all-SEC championship. Now, during the bowl season, SEC is 4-5.
Right.
Big Ten is 7-1. You want to know what the Pac-12 is?
What's the Pac-12?
1-8.
1-8.
All right, so.
Did they have anybody in the now, college playoff?
Now,
okay, go ahead.
Now, this is, let me do it like this first. This is a point to mind where the Pac-12, even the conference champion, don't even deserve to go. They 1-8.
1-8.
But anyway, all SEC Right. And, you know, everybody's still bumping Big Ten. 7-1, still the best conference, top to bottom, things of that nature. Your thoughts on the All-SEC Championship and what statement does it say?
Well, I guess it's a good thing that this is a down year for the SEC. So maybe they'd have four teams. I mean, a lot of this thing is matchups. You know, we have to go back and look at, you know, how the Big Ten's, you know, competition was in the bowl season, who they played, and actually who the SEC played. We've heard all year, there's been that narrative that the SEC is down, that the SEC East is was horrible. And
Tennessee was.
Right, but it was no more worth. It wasn't as, you know, if you want to just split hairs, the Big Ten side with Wisconsin side was
horrible. Yeah, it was hard because they got all new coaches almost.
I mean, these things do run in cycles, but this is all a bias against the SEC because they've dominated the championships over the last decade. So, I mean, that narrative about Alabama shouldn't have been in and the SEC having two teams or whatever isn't right or whatever, well, they had a chance to keep them out of it. You understand? I mean, seriously, both of the teams had to play. They both beat these other teams.
Right.
And you got an All-SEC final. So it wasn't like somebody voted them in to the championship game. They both won.
Right. Even if they would have flip-flopped, if Alabama would have played Oklahoma, Clemson would have played Georgia, I think the same result.
Yeah. And we got some stats to kind of prove, you know, what goes on with these other conferences, man, because they don't match up. I mean, and Clemson, by far, to me, had a great defense.
Yeah, they.
But the offense just, that proves how good Deshaun Watson was.
Oh, ain't no doubt.
I mean, if we really look at it, there was no reason for him not to be drafted before a lot of those quarterbacks last year. And this proves the point. When you can do the things that he did against Alabama 2 years in a row, then when he's gone, you see what happens to their offense. Enough said.
Yeah, I agree. IG, question number three. Black Monday was on New Year's Day this year in the NFL, and there's some NFL vacancies that are available. I think it's about six. Can you give us an update on what's going on in the NFL in the coaching carousel?
I guess we can't really call it Black Monday anymore because
they'll
do it right after the game. Look at Chuck Pagano. That's one of them. That they won the game, and he still got fired. So Bruce Arians, that's an open job in Arizona. He opted to retire.
Him and Carson Palmer.
And Carson Palmer also retiring. The Bears fired John Fox. Three just sorry years. They finished in last place each year. Vance Joseph is going to stay.
Wow.
I was surprised at that.
Yeah, but they fired like six other coaches. So
John Elway's trying to make a man.
Yeah, I was real shocked that he stayed around, to be honest with you.
Jim Caldwell is out. I thought he was going to stay, but
fake contract.
Yeah, like we thought it was a 2-year extension. It was really a 2-year with a team option for the second year. Mm-hmm. Like one of those NBA contracts.
Fine print.
Right, so it was really a 1-year contract. the Giants, of course, they fired McAdoo. Oakland, maybe John Gruden is coming back because they fired Jack Del Rio so fast. I think there are some shenanigans regarding the Rooney Rule.
Yeah.
To where are they abiding by it? Are they not? The Fritz Pollard Alliance, do they think something's going on? So there's some shenanigans going on there. And surprisingly, I don't know how, but Marvin Lewis is still the coach of the Cincinnati Bengals.
2-year deal.
A 2-year deal. We all thought he was going to get fired or he was just going to leave.
No, they said he was going to the front office or something.
I think it proves that either Mike Brown is very, very cheap, because I think there was 1 year left on the contract and he didn't want to pay Marvin Lewis to do nothing, or he has the worst case of separation anxiety that we have ever seen.
So what if you're a Cincinnati Bengals fan, how do you feel about that?
I don't even know if you have any feelings, man. I mean, it's you got to be numb because He got hired, what, 12 years ago now?
15.
15 years ago. I shorted him three. 15 years. And before he got fired, before he got hired, they had 5 playoff wins. Guess how many they got now?
0.
No, they still got 5. They haven't won any more since he's been there.
And they've been 7 more times.
Yeah. In the South, Atlanta always gets judged as a soft city. You know, as far as the media on their coaches and whatever. Well, they need to start talking about Cincinnati.
Yes!
I mean, that's ridiculous, man. I don't know how this cat's keeping this job. He's had people off the field. He has players have died during his watch, falling out of trucks. I mean, Vontaze Burfict is the poster child for fines and getting suspended. Pac-Man Jones, No offense, Pac-Man. I know you're from the A. No offense. But I'm just saying, running afoul of the law. And he's like Teflon, man. He's like John Gotti. He just can't be touched, man.
Wow.
I don't understand it.
G, what else you got? That's all you got?
Well, there's still no... I was looking for a word about John Gruden coming back. Hugh Jackson is staying in Cleveland, despite not winning a game. And it's only happened once before, and that was because with Rod Marinelli?
Marinelli, I believe.
Yeah, he had to go. I guess the notion of you can't go 0-16 to keep a job, it really wasn't Hugh Jackson's fault this time.
Right.
But it might be another issue where the owner has separation anxiety or doesn't want to pay any money left in the contract. I think the only drama with Cleveland is Hugh Jackson going to jump into the lake as he promised last year?
Yeah.
If they went 1-15 or 0-16.
So, but did y'all hear the comment that Hugh Jackson made?
Which one?
He said, what other coach could have done what I've done in 2 years?
Oh, no, I didn't hear that.
And that is what now?
That's a long line of coaches is what that is.
Oh my God. Facebook Live Vicky say, why is 4-5 coming to the Georgia Alabama game?
He's coming?
Yeah.
You gotta be kidding me.
Yeah, gotta be some kind of bad luck or something, right?
No, I didn't know he was coming.
He thinks that's where his base is.
Yeah, okay.
Can appeal to the base.
Yeah, he will be here.
I didn't know he was coming. That's news.
Yeah, I mean, it's already enough traffic.
Wow.
Monday. Might as well just do a half a day Monday.
I wish everybody would kneel now. Everybody take a knee, baby.
Oh, boy. All right, and Baker Mayfield, your thoughts on him being in the NFL and expectations.
Have you heard these terms before? It's just the way he plays. Wouldn't be the player he is if he didn't act like this. He was provoked into that. His teammates respect him. Love him on your team, hate him on others. You heard those adjectives before?
Yeah.
They describe players that are in the same ilk, right? But when they're said about other players as such in the T.O. case, where he was left out of the Hall of Fame for basically all of these things I just said, right?
Right.
But when you attribute them to players that are liked in the media, they're considered enhancements and make that player more than what he is. I watched Baker Mayfield the other day, and I found out that what I constantly find out about these teams with these spread offenses more times than not, that they're a product of the system.
Right.
In the first half, you watch Baker throw the football. Yeah, he was throwing, but they were to open receivers, right?
Right.
When those windows got smaller, why was Georgia able to get there in the second half? Because they were in the windows. They made those windows smaller. He couldn't hit. He couldn't get to the second reads and third reads, and he would not cut the ball loose. We already have that he's slow. He's not as fast as Johnny Manziel. He's not as big as the other quarterbacks. He's small in frame and whatever. So he has all these detractors, but they still want to put him and say he has a future in the NFL. But to me, what I saw when he played against an SEC-style defense or a defense that made adjustments, he didn't make the adjustments. He could not hit the people in the windows as on the anticipation throws that we talk about that a quarterback needs.
Right.
They weren't there because he's used to throwing against Big 12 competition. So to me, the game that I watched the other day detracted from anything about him going to the next level, if you're asking me. Yeah, he has a good strong arm. He has some good arm talent, and he has some instincts about evading the rush. But those are things that we always say about other quarterbacks that become detriments when you talk about the NFL, because they say, well, that quarterback needs to be able to go through his progressions.
Right.
But I didn't see him go through them. So as far as you're asking me about the NFL and the next level, I don't see it. Not right now. I didn't see anything that showed me he should be up in the top, up above these other two quarterbacks that they're so highly touting. But even with that, Darnold looked horrible in his bowl game.
Well, they say he's 50-50. He might be on the way back
to
USC.
He needs to go back.
So your thoughts on Baker is pretty much from the skill side of things. But do you think his off-the-field antics detracts from GMs and things of that nature that puts a kind of a red?
It should. But like I said to you before, listen to the other shows.
Yeah.
I've listened to shows all week, and I hear excuses for his behavior.
Right.
That this is part of who he is. But in any other circumstance, they will be detractors. But no, his flamboyancy, his in your face, his not humbling himself.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying? All these things are what makes him who he is when you hear everything that goes in his favor. But if you're GMs, they're supposed to be red flags.
Right.
So we'll see.
I got you. G, Mayfield, you think he'll be a good pro?
I think it's possible. But here's the thing. We have been spoiled the last few years by quarterbacks who start in their first year. And because they're drafted in the first round. I think he's going to be drafted in the first round, but he should not play as a rookie.
Right.
He should not play at all. Like the Chiefs are doing with Mahomes. Groom him, let him learn the offense, because with the style at Oklahoma, no one does that in the NFL.
Right.
The up-tempo, no huddle for the whole game.
Air raid offense.
Yeah, no one does that in the NFL.
Chip Kelly back in college.
So for him to be successful in the NFL, he's going to need a year just to learn an NFL offense. I wouldn't be surprised if, because I told some friends this the other day, the last two wins that the Cleveland Browns have, the quarterback was a Heisman Trophy winner. So the Browns kind of have to draft Baker Mayfield if they want to win a game.
Wow.
Do you see him getting drafted in the top four rounds?
Yeah.
All right. And excuse me, because I'm going to ask you. If he were a black quarterback, would you see him getting drafted in the top four rounds?
Nope.
That's a big statement then.
Yeah.
Because, like I said, what I saw in the second half of that game showed me that he's just an athletic.
Well, let me just say it like this, and we're going to move on to question number five. If it was a black quarterback, then he'd have probably got drafted in the first three rounds as a receiver.
Or a safety.
I mean.
Enough said.
Yep. All right, question number five. Your homeboy, Steph Curry. Comes back, 38 points, 10 threes in 26 minutes. Thoughts on Steph?
I guess once you learn how to ride a bike, it's just what you do. I watched the game. Well, I watched most of the highlights anyway. And seeing him, it's just that what we talk about in their offense, he doesn't have to come back and be just a playmaker. He right. doesn't have to come back and just defend. He doesn't have to come back and just distribute or just to shoot. Their offense is so multifaceted that they're going to get him good looks. They're going to get him shots. He's going to get screened for. He's going to make open plays. And it's just, it's a well-oiled machine. So with him coming back, all it did was enhance the scoring of the team. The defense might have suffered a little bit because they gave up a lot of points.
They scored 141 to like 130 or 120 something.
Well, something like that.
Yeah.
So what I'm saying is when he's out of the lineup, their defense enhances. They still can score because nobody can stop KD when he wants to score and everybody else can get off and get quality shots. But when he comes back, it's like putting a boost, like running on a higher octane of gas.
Right.
So other teams have to continue to try to score, which kind of helps their defense also. But, I mean, I honestly don't see when they're playing and they're clicking the way they play, it's going to be hard to beat Golden State, man. He fit right back in like he had never missed a beat.
And he missed four weeks. Four weeks, right? 4 weeks.
And it's like we said, he doesn't have to go in the paint and bang to get his. He doesn't have to try to penetrate to get his. The floor is going to be spread because they got open shooters. So if there's one thing in this earth that he does better than anybody that we've seen, it's shoot. So when he gets open looks, they're going to go in. And what the thing about it is, what did he do the whole time he was off?
Shoot.
Mm. So, I mean, it's right up his alley, man. I mean, it was seamless, man.
Seamless.
Him coming back was just seamless.
Well, somebody else came back last night as well, and we're going to talk about that when we get to other news real quick. But I want to at least give you this thought. I told everybody that now we know why the Pats signed James Harrison.
Okay.
You know the Pittsburgh Steelers, they rested their team this past week. You know who was their running back starting this week?
Who started the game? Was it, I know his name, Fitzgerald Toussaint? Did he start or did he play a lot?
He played a lot.
Well, was it guy from Pittsburgh?
Connor.
No, he hurt, and that's the thing.
Okay.
Connor got hurt December the 19th. Pittsburgh signed Stephen Ridley.
Right, that's it. From Patriots. Sure did.
He, obviously, is a Super Bowl winner with the Patriots. 7 days later, James Harrison gets released, and who picks up James Harrison?
Patriots.
So now Ridley can.
So you think it was tit for tat then?
Yo, ain't no doubt. So Ridley can tell the defense what to look for with Brady and vice versa.
I didn't even know Ridley was still in the league.
Yeah, he played a lot Sunday.
He
and Fitzgerald Toussaint both, they shared a lot of time. I forgot Ridley did play.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I did see him in the field.
Yep. So there you go. That's why the Pats.
I just got news that Donald declares for the draft.
Did he? Poor thing. Same.
Good luck. That's coming from Eric Vincent. We'll check on that, make sure, but that's what's coming from Facebook.
All right, man. Let's go in the hot news when we get back from break. We got our main man, Falcoholic DW, be on the phone with us. So y'all hanging out with us. You listen to Sports Roundtable. SRTRadio.com on AM 1100.
We'll be back with more Sports Roundtable on the Worldwide Radio Network.
What's up? This your man, D-Will the Coach, here on behalf of Real Talk Tees. Real Talk Tees is for the players, geniuses, and bosses. For those who hustle, for the fresh, and for the iconic. Real Talk Tees is urban, affordable, vintage t-shirts to help you express yourself. So visit realtalktees.bigcartel.com to order yours today. So how about this? You got a specific mood in mind? Custom orders are available also to help you and yours stand out. So visit realtalktees.bigcartel.com, where what's real lasts forever.
Are you looking for a new, pre-owned, or used car to get you around the city or simply from point A to point B? Look no further. Jay's Used Cars is the place to be. Jay believes your job is your credit, and no matter what your situation is, Jay will get you in a car. Visit Jay's at 3820 Lawrenceville Highway in Tucker and mention Sports Roundtable, get a 10% discount. Go to jaysusedcars.com to check out the inventory. Jay's Used Cars, where they stack them deep and sell them cheap.
Sports Roundtable.
My buster this week, maybe it's a different kind of buster. He might be more of a mark. Mm-mm. And that is Michael Crabtree of the Oakland Raiders for getting his chain snatched a second time by Aqib Talib.
And he taped it. Rumors are, allegedly, he taped his chain to his body. So he wouldn't snatch his chain. Y'all know what that reminded me of?
Depot.
I'm just going to tuck mine in.
Yeah.
I'm just going to tuck mine in. Come on, man.
Only on 1100 AM, the Worldwide Radio Network.
What do Falcons do?
Falcons rise up.
Please welcome everyone's favorite Falcoholic, David D.W. Walker.
We're back, Sports Roundtable, with our guy. And sorry for the stuffiness. I am kind of stuffed up, D-Dub. I hope you are feeling well and better than I am, and Happy New Year to you. We have our guy from the Falcoholic, and you can follow him at Falcoholic D-W. He's on the phone with us with the Falcon Report. D-Dub, Happy New Year to you, and how you doing, sir?
Happy New Year. I'm doing good. Playoffs are here.
There you go. There you go. All right, let's get this thing started. Grade, give me a grade for the Falcons against Carolina this past week.
Ooh, I'm going to split it into two units. We're going to talk about, or three units. Defense, I think you got to give them the A+. They were in Cam's face. They were shutting down the pass, shutting down the run. Fantastic display. The offense, B-. You know, honestly, they were moving the ball but not finishing drives. So a little bit frustrating, but still put up some points. And then special teams, I'm going to give them a C. And they were spared simply by the fact that Matt Bryant is an ageless god.
Yes. All right, so this second question is going to probably prompt you to write an article about this. So... if it wasn't for Julio drop touchdown in Carolina, a Hooper drop interception in, versus Miami, we should have beaten the Bills. We lead the league in third down percentage, ninth in offense, 10th in defense, the only team in the NFC to return to the playoffs from last year. Would you consider this bad luck, or are we really underestimating the Falcons' season this year?
I mean, it's a great question. You know, I think there are a lot of teams every year that are just a few plays away from having two or three more wins or two or three more losses. You know, you could easily make the argument as well that they could have lost the Bears and the Lions games in the first couple of weeks of the season. So, you know, it's... I think the record is indicative of who this team really is. They have been inconsistent at times, but at times they've had, you know, key components of the team step up. You know, the defense played fantastic against the Panthers on Sunday. In some of their wins, it's been the offense that's carried them. You know, those individual plays stand out in our minds, but across the entirety of 16 games. I think with most NFL teams, you can make the argument that they were, you know, a couple plays away from two or three more wins. So I think 10-6 is, you know, arguably what this team is. And, you know, thankfully it doesn't mean anything in the playoffs. And now is the time to prove that they're better than what their record was.
Gotcha. How healthy are we going into Saturday? We saw Claiborne on the sideline. We saw Gabriel limp to the sideline, and now we're hearing maybe Devontae Freeman is kind of like missing practice and things of that nature. So how healthy are we going in?
That's going to be the big question. I think Devontae will play. It sounds like he's been a limited participant today. Taylor Gabriel, as far as I know, still hasn't practiced. Obviously, we lost Andy Levitre. He went to injured reserve yesterday. Honestly, the Falcons are piling up some injuries at the wrong time of the season. I do think some of the key names there, like Devontae, Julio, will play. But there are a few names like Taylor Gabriel that we won't know really until we get to Thursday and Friday and see the injury report.
Gotcha. On the phone, we got our main man, DW, from the Falcoholic. You can follow him at FalcoholicDW, and you listen to Sports Roundtable.
D-Dub, sports superhero here. And what's going on, man?
Well, rise up. How are you doing?
Doing good, man. Look, first question I want to ask you is, do you think the Falcons can flip that proverbial switch that we always hear about? Can they turn it on and make a run, really, in these playoffs?
The talent's there, and I think that's the important thing. When you look at this Falcons team, you look at Matt Ryan, an MVP from last season, who's arguably playing better than the statistics really are saying. Julio Jones, who has been uncharacteristic with the drops this year. Devontae Freeman, Tevin Coleman. The talent is there for them to score. The defense, I think, has been coming alive the last few games and has really played well, especially guys like Deion Jones, Keanu Neal, even, the rookie Tack McKinley has stood out, Grady Jarrett. The talent is there, and I think it is very possible that they flip the switch, turn us on in the playoffs, and make a big run. You've got to remember, to the point you made earlier, they're the only team returning to the playoffs from last season in the NFC, and that does mean something. The playoffs are a different animal. You've got a lot of inexperienced quarterbacks that are going to be playing, over the next couple weeks. That could be a factor. And I think the Falcons, if they turn it on, could be a very, very dangerous team in the playoffs.
Really, right. And that's really, you kind of went right into my second question, which was, when you look at these quarterbacks that they could be facing, the inexperience of Goff with the Rams, whatever Foles is doing with Philly, we really don't know. And Keenum being a journeyman quarterback. The only two quarterbacks that you should really, well, I'm kind of getting ahead and saying you should fear or whatever, or kind of be, leery of, are the two that you face two times a year, and that's Breeze and Cam. So with that being said, like I said, do you think the coaching staff is feeling pretty good about, the situation they might be facing in these playoffs?
I think they've got, if you look at the various teams in the NFC, they've got a road to the NFC Championship game that could be one of the easier ones, considering the schedule. If they can beat the Rams in LA, they go up to Philadelphia to face, a Nick Foles-led offense, which is far different than the one that was led by Carson Wentz. Foles is a backup, and he's a backup for a reason. And honestly, after that, you're either going into Carolina, you're going into New Orleans, or you're going into, Minnesota. And we've beat two of those teams already this season. So we know we can beat the Saints. We know we can beat the Panthers. And we kept it close against the Vikings. I don't think it's unreasonable to think that the Falcons could make a run. I think if you're looking for some hope, you look at these teams, the Falcons have a realistic chance. It's going to be hard, but it is a realistic chance.
Right, I agree with you. Looking at it, I feel the same way about that. The last question I got for you is that every time I watch Julio play, it seems that there's always a nagging something after a catch or after he's hitting the ground, there's a little gimp or something. Now, he comes back in, but what are we seeing with him? Are these just little nagging injuries that have, plagued him the whole year? Or is it something that, you should be kind of, a little afraid of going forward with, his future years?
Julio right now reminds me a lot of Calvin Johnson towards the back end of his career. Calvin Johnson was obviously a dominant player at his position. But in the back end of his career, he started suffering these injuries that would linger. And even with those injuries, Calvin Johnson was still dominating the league and still beating double teams. And we're seeing sort of the same thing out of Julio. I think the reality is you know, these guys are such freaks of nature with the size, the strength, the speed, that at some point the human body just can't keep up with that sort of production nonstop without suffering some injuries. And honestly, I'll take a Julio at 85% over, you know, 9/10 of the league as it is. But yeah, I do think there is something to it. I think, you know, guys like Julio who play at such a high level, you know, high speed, high physicality, it does eventually catch up. It's the nature of the NFL, and we've seen it before.
All right, we are. You listen to Sports Roundtable on the phone. We got our guy from the Falcoholic DW. You can follow him on Twitter at Falcoholic DW.
All right, DW, this is G. Now, I guess surprisingly, or like maybe there it was under the radar, the Falcons were a top 10 defense this year. So going into this game against the Rams, a lot of factors may play into it. Okay, they're going to the West Coast. Maybe there's a time difference they have to deal with. But what do you think is the most important part that the Falcons have to deal with as far as going to L.A. to play the Rams? Like, is it anything logistically with travel or anything to dealing with their any of their players, any of the Rams players, that is?
So, you know, the Rams offense is obviously a very good one, but I don't think that they're unstoppable. If you look at Todd Gurley, he is easily one of the best offensive players in the league this season, which I'm sure UGA fans love to hear. But the reality is the Falcons, over the past several games, have been remarkably good at stopping the run. They shut down the Panthers. They limited the Saints, the week before. So this defense has shown the ability to really limit the run. And I think if you can make the Rams one-dimensional, if you can take Gurley, you know, somewhat out of the equation, they are a beatable team. You know, there have been a couple times that the Rams have been limited in their scoring this year. So they are not an unstoppable offense. I do think it starts and ends with Gurley. If you remove him as a factor from the offensive game plan, you stand a very good chance of keeping keeping the scoring down, and I think that's what they're going to have to do. So I don't think the travel is going to be a big deal. Dan Quinn has been very good about preparing this team for long trips. And honestly, the Rams don't have a significant home field advantage like what you would see in rowdy stadiums like what you see with the Saints. So I think, honestly, if you can keep Gurley contained, you have a very good chance of winning this game.
All right, one more question. So with you said that would it take a low-scoring game for the Falcons to win? Like, if it's below 20 points, do you think they could contain the Rams that much and, you know, put up enough points to win? Or how many points do you think it would take from the offense to give the Falcons the best chance to win?
My prediction on the podcast this week was actually a very close win, and it's in the mid-20s. And I'm going to stay by that. I think if the Falcons offense can put up between, you know, 24 to 28 points, that is enough that their defense, especially with the way they've played the past few weeks, their defense matches up actually very well with the Rams. If you look at position by position, there's some pretty good matchups there. I think if the Falcons can put up 24 to 28 points on offense, they stand a very good chance of pulling off the upset this weekend.
All right, DW, I can't be remiss by saying that Matt LaFleur, former quarterback coach here for Matt Ryan and the Falcons, is the OC. Mm-hmm. How much of an advantage will that give him, or how much of a motivation does that give him to try to beat the Falcons, as he may think that we passed on him for the job?
Oh, well, there's always that revenge element, right? And I think that's certainly in play here. I think the big thing is, you know, Sean McVay is, you know, the head coach, is still really the primary play caller for this offense. And not to take anything away from, you know, McFleur, but I think really this is Sean McVay's offense with what he's doing with Goff and with Gurley and with the offensive line. That said, you know, the Rams are motivated. They're hungry. They have had a fantastic season. I don't want to take anything away from what they've accomplished. McVay is a legitimate Coach of the Year candidate. Gurley should be in the conversation for MVP. You know, this is a very, very good team. I don't know that they need any more motivation. And honestly, I think, you know, if you look at the coaching circles in the NFL, you can make a case for revenge games all over the league. But I think the motivation is there regardless of the past links.
All right, we're going to move forward. This is probably going to be my next to last question. Paul Upshaw, Claiborne, all free agents after this season. Which way do you go?
Mm-hmm. Claiborne or Upshaw? Oh, you know, honestly, the Falcons are going to have 24 free agents after this season. Yeah. And it's something we've been talking about at the Falcoholic. It's really significant.
Yes.
I'm not sure that they're going to be able to keep many of those guys. You know, the thing to keep in mind is Matt Ryan will be on the last year of his contract. It's a near guarantee that they're going to give him a big deal in 2018. Grady Jarrett is probably going to be up for a big contract.
Yep.
I think they're going to look to keep more of the guys that they've drafted. So I would look more towards guys like Matt Ryan, Grady Jarrett getting a deal. And I think you could see guys like Upshaw and even Adrian Claiborne hit the free agent market.
The keys to winning this weekend for the Falcons?
It's pretty simple. I think, you know, you look at the Rams offense, they're the number one scoring offense in the league. But it really does hinge off of, you know, Todd Gurley. He has nearly 2,000 yards from scrimmage. He's been a fantastic player for him this year, rejuvenated under their new head coach. If you can limit him in the running game, and I think the Falcons have the ability to, and you can limit him in the passing game, which Deion Jones has been one of the best coverage linebackers in the league, and you can put this game in the hands of an inexperienced quarterback, even if he's had a good season, I think that is what favors you best. And that's what I would look towards. I would look towards stopping the run, putting the Rams in third and long, if possible, and that's where you're going to succeed.
There you go. All right, with that being said, give me your prediction.
Oh, you know, a lot of people have been looking past the Rams, and you can't do that. This is a very, very good team with a very young and exciting head coach. You know, I've got a lot of respect for this Rams team. They've got the best defensive tackle in the league in Aaron Donald. You know, do not sleep on this team. This is going to be a very tough game, which is why I think it's going to be a very close one. In the end, I think the Falcons' playoff experience will finally come through. I think they'll get rid of some of the errors, the drops, the penalties, and clean up their game going into this Saturday. I am predicting the upset. Falcons win 24-23 in Los Angeles.
All right, there it is. My main man, DW. All right, before you go, D-Doug, tell everybody where they can find your podcast.
Yes, sir. The Falcoholic Podcast actually returns this week. You'll be able to find it on all of your favorite platforms like iTunes, Google Play Store, and Stitcher. And, of course, you can find me on Twitter at FalcoholicDW.
Hey, man, we really appreciate it, man. And I hope the Falcons rise up just like you rise up every week that you get with us. So we really appreciate it, man, and you have a good one.
Thanks, guys. Rise up.
Rise up.
Rise up, D-Dub.
There it is, man. D-Dub, say 24-23. Falcons in the upset. So, Han, I know you've been talking about the, you know, you're in, anything can happen. This is probably the weakest path to this cold Minnesota.
Yeah, I mean, possibly.
You know, and then you got inexperience.
Right.
And quarterbacks.
That's the key. And, you know, like I was kind of iterating with D-Dub, we don't know what Keenum can do as far as leading a team in the playoffs. He's been a journeyman quarterback. You know, we don't know what Foles can do. We've seen the last 2 weeks, I was expecting a lot more before he started playing.
Yeah.
But that's the good thing about backup quarterbacks. They're all good until they have to get under center.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of his, you know, shortcomings have been exposed. So that limits Philadelphia. You know, they have a great defense and they have weapons on offense. But if you can't use those weapons, then your offense becomes just kind of mediocre.
Yeah.
And then when we look at the Rams, like I said, you have Todd Gurley. And they have kind of some big play wide receivers or whatever, but the trigger man can is inexperienced. We don't know what happens in that playoff. You know, you show him something, he sees a ghost, he sees something that he hadn't seen all year, he might give you a ball or two. Who knows? And when you get in the playoffs at this level, it's just about, you know, when you and I were talking, just get a ticket to the dance. You know, and you never know how far or what might happen. You just got to get in. And the Falcons were able to get themselves in a position now that everybody's now is on an even playing field.
Yeah.
You know.
I agree.
One win, two wins, whatever, you know.
You lost, you're gone.
It's win or go home now.
I agree.
So, hey, they did what they needed to do, which was get in the playoffs.
All right, man. All right, we appreciate DW calling in, man, giving us that fact report. And 24 free agents, boy, that's going to be a lot. That's going to be – they going to have the –
yeah. Matt's going to have to take that hometown discount like Brady does.
Yeah.
You know, you want to say that he's close to Brady, well, do some Brady stuff. Yeah. Take that hometown discount.
I agree. We got to do something. D-Will made it in the building, ladies and gentlemen. My main man.
Good to see you, Weezy.
Hey, good to be here, man. I got a little voice problem, but I'm here.
What's wrong with y'all, man?
Man.
Hey, no. You know what was wrong with us. You know what's wrong with me.
You've been screaming.
Monday night, baby. Monday night got me.
All right, so in other news, the IT department.
That's a hell of a nickname. You might want to call him on that. Like, that's hell of a, I ain't never heard that. That's a hell of a nickname.
Immediately. Trademark it.
Yes.
Trademark that one.
That was heard first on the SRT show.
You too, because you was talking about our loyal listeners, and mm-hmm. you talking about how Sway has, what do you call it?
The citizens.
Well, being that we are penthouse people, we got tenants.
What's up to all the tenants, the SRT tenants out there?
SRT tenants.
Oh, that's right. Awesome.
Hey, so he had 17 points in 19 minutes. D-Will, let's go ahead and jump in, man. How did he look? What you think?
Surprisingly, he looked great. Granted, it was against the Portland Trail Blazers who
the Hawks beat.
Thank you. they're not much of a viable opponent. But we will say this, their guard play is awesome. Damian Lillard was back on the court last night. They do have CJ, so he had competition to go against, even though he played a lot against the second team for coming off the bench. But we all knew IT could score the basketball. That's not a question. He could put the ball in the hole. And he showed last night something that people didn't realize that he could do. He's a catch-and-shoot player. All right, you can put IT on the wing or put IT in the corner and let LeBron do his thing and kick it out, and that's just about money. You saw him, a lot of his points last night came off catch and shoots. Now, he is an off-the-dribble, create-his-own-shot type of player, but he is capable of being that catch-and-shoot type player on the court with LeBron James.
All right, Han, real quick, what you think of last night in IT?
Small sample size, better than expected. I do agree they played against a good couple of three people. But I want to see when he goes against someone that's going to put him in some pick and roll and post him. They had him posted a couple times last night, and Nurkic would pass the ball and then go try to set a pick down low. Why?
Yeah.
Put him in the torture chamber. So I want to see him get banged around a little bit because I want to see what that hip is like. And still, like we said, I want to see more of the spot up shooting. I know D. Will say he was surprised and pleased with it. I want to see more of it because, like I said, if he's spotting or if spotting up, that means he's just standing there. And LeBron is creating or whatever. What happens to all the other minutes? You know, it's got to be rotations. You got people with egos. We'll see what happens.
Well,
but I was pleasantly surprised with what I saw.
Well, he's going to start next time.
That's what I'm saying.
So
now
he'll be able to spread the floor a little more.
I still think they're going to move. But Tristan played well last night, but he might get moved before the deadline.
They talking about DeAndre Jordan.
I heard that.
Yeah, and Tristan needs to be moved before the deadline.
He does nothing for them. Swapping places. Yeah. The same player.
Like Marty Terry did say, IT passed the ball last night with some. I saw him make some baseline passes to D-Wade.
Oh, the no-look was
last
beautiful.
Last night, that were nice. I agree, Marty. So seeing that was nice.
Yeah.
And, we know he can create. That's not a question. We know he can create.
And they do need to do something to limit LeBron's minutes. One, the biggest thing was LeBron sat a long time last mm-hmm. night. And yeah, he's been playing big minutes.
If he can do that,
that's going to help.
And competition matters.
Yeah, true. I agree.
True.
And then I want to see him play on the road. You know, play on the road. In other news, Saquon Barkley signs with Roc Nation.
Smart.
Big Apple, baby. Need to be in the Big Apple.
UCF AD Danny White say they will celebrate an undefeated season by putting up a championship banner. Is that
too much? Boy, stop!
Is that too much?
Yes.
Yeah, that's way too much.
Yeah, it's too much.
Be well, happy.
Also, they're going to get their national championship bonuses.
Now that's a good gesture by the school to give them that.
They gonna get paid as if they won that championship.
Who is?
The coaches.
The coaches.
Oh, that's cool. That's losing their coach, though.
The coaching staff. Yeah,
coaches in
a farewell check.
Nebraska. So, UCF, that's cool. It's a nice little story, but it's being the tallest midget at the party. I mean, it really don't mean nothing.
It means absolutely nothing. Absolutely nothing. Because, hey, but I do want to give a shout out to UCF, the kid number two, Burkett, who got the interception and locked up the game. Is from Montgomery, Alabama. Went to Carver High School.
Shout out
to Burkett.
All right, this is a real question though. Serious now. Don't look at me crazy when I ask this question. What makes John Gruden that guy?
Oh yeah, you already know what makes him that guy.
Other than
he's Lily, and he is he's Lily, and two.
I mean,
he's a quarterback guru, okay? He's built his brand on television. He's done nothing.
There you hit it.
Yeah. He's done nothing in the coaching ranks to say he's the savior. But he's built a brand on television that has
look at G face.
Right place, right time. He came in, took Tony Dungy's team, and won a Super Bowl, right? He got on Monday Night Football
with Brad Johnson.
Back in the day, which was the Cadillac of football.
With Mike Tirico.
Right. So it's just like anytime we see people go to television. Look, Randy Moss is starting to get a brand now. Mm-hmm. When you're on television and you're on a big vehicle, whatever you did kind of softens the blow from any negative that you had. You very rarely now even think about Randy Moss and him pulling his pants down.
Right.
And doing all
that. None of his ill wills have come out.
Trent Dilfer became a quarterback whisperer.
Yes, he's a guru.
And he was horrible as an NFL quarterback.
Yes, thank you.
You know, Sean Salisbury had a gig, and he was nothing.
Hey, I mean, Hasselbeck is on TV talking every day about football.
Exactly. So what I'm saying is,
That's the other one.
You get a platform, and it just enhances your brand. And his brand, the Chucky thing, all these type
Spider Y2.
Thank you. Yeah. Nobody know football. Why they know Spider Y2, but yeah. All
right, G, what your faces said everything.
I hate the term quarterback guru. I hate that term because there is no such person. There is no real quarterback guru. John Gruden wasn't a quarterback guru as a coach. He just collected quarterbacks. Like, he had Brad Johnson, and then he put in Bruce Gradkowski, and then he put in Josh Johnson, and he played like 12 different quarterbacks with the Bucks. And he just knows some quarterbacks. He gets to meet them all when they go into the draft. So That's the quarterback guru part, which isn't a real thing.
Well, you can't poo-poo his knowledge of the game.
Well, no. Stop calling him a quarterback guru.
Right, and a lot of it is about where you come from. Look, Gruden, all these people were get the donuts, coffee type guys that came through those trees that the Holmgren and all those people, and he was one of those disciples. And they do it all the time. They bring these folks up. You're going to see his son come up through the ranks like that. Watch. He's already in Washington's lineup now, coming up under his brother. Listen, so that's what they do. It's nepotism, man. And they bring him up through these coaching trees. Holmgren, what's the other one that came out of that?
From where?
Big Red out of that. Boy from Kansas City.
Yeah, Andy Reid.
All these guys are from that same lineage of coaches.
That Bill Walsh.
Bill Walsh line, and they all went through Green Bay and all this, and they just keep them coming.
We know that's the deal because on subject, off subject, we see that in our industry also. Mike Golick's son is one of the biggest people on – Mike Golick Jr. is taking over the four-letter network. Also, I saw Chris Collinsworth's son doing that on ESPN, sitting in the film room, doing a segment on the Four Letter Network. And I'm like, who are these guys and what have they done to get in this position? The same as the, I'm sorry, G, quarterback gurus that we're talking about right now. It's the lineage. It's the lily whiteness. It's however you want to put it. But it is them just getting a layup to do what they're supposed to do what they're doing. And none of them did anything to say, hey, I deserve this spot besides my parent or my father or my mentor who brought me up in the coaching game put me in this position.
And while we shooting three.
While we over here grinding.
That's it. We're grinding. But it happens in all life. Look, same thing with Patriots and Belichick and all the people that came up through. Scott Pioli, all these people that we see now, all these big names, they started way down at the bottom doing film work and whatever. But it happens in all industries. In Miami, look at Spoelstra. Spoelstra was a tape guy.
Hey, let's go to college. Look at Kirby Smart. Kirby Smart was hired by Nick Saban as a coffee getter. He was behind Will Muschamp. He was Will Muschamp's friend. He wanted someone young who he could groom, and he turned into Kirby Smart.
Wow. All right, man, we're going to take a break.
Oh, tell him about, we know it was almost automatic, but Sam Darnold and Josh Rosen declared for the NFL.
You just heard it came through.
There it is. End of our first hour of the show. When we come back, we're going to talk more about that Patriot thing. We're going to break down this college football and NFL wild card weekend. Thanks for tuning in to the first half of the show. D-Wheel is in the building, baby.
Yeah.
You already know. We'll be right back. SRTRadio.com.
Are you thinking about changing the station? You're only hurting yourself. Keep listening to Sports Roundtable on 1100 AM.
WWE Peakville, AM 1100.
The opinions expressed during the sponsored programs on this station are strictly those of the program hosts, guests, and callers and are not necessarily those of Beasley Broadcast Group, this station, its staff, other advertisers, or agencies.
There's a lot going on in the world, and your world is always changing. That's why it's important to stay connected. The latest news, the latest entertainment, the newest music. If it's in the air or on the air, it can be in the palm of your hand, wherever you are, with the iHeartRadio app.
iHeartRadio.
Over 1,500 live radio stations from across the country and over 15 million songs to create your own custom stations. Text IHR to 45495 to download the app or listen at iHeartRadio.com. Standard text and data rates apply.
Basketball season is already underway, and even though you're playing, you want to take your game to the next level. That's where the Bow Bell Basketball Academy comes in. For boys and girls ages 6 and up, Atlanta's own Bo Bell has played and coached basketball all around the world and is here to share his philosophies to help any player maximize their potential. Visit CoachBoBell.com for details about upcoming camps or call 770-912-4104 for more information. Bo Bell Basketball Academy. Maximize your true potential.
Okay, so where do more Americans turn first in the morning to start their day? Go on, tell them, Robin.
Good morning, America.
George.
Good morning, America.
Lara.
Good morning, America.
So, take it from Robin.
Put some good in your morning.
With ABC's Good Morning America.
Sports Roundtable.
I saw a thing today where he was picking up everything in the weight room. When I say everything, everything in the weight room. The
entire
room.
All at one time.
So
that's why G say, man, I'm not finna tell him that.
If he get
send him a text message.
If he get a shot on Brady.
You mean Ben.
I mean on Ben. He might hit Brady, too. He might lose his mind. You know.
On the Worldwide Radio Network, 1100 AM.
Uh-oh, Brazy.
Yeah.
Looks like they back for a fifth season, man.
Who that?
Sports Roundtable.
Who?
SRT, they got that realness flowing in they DNA. Damn you lame, if you ain't tuned to SRT today. H.O. got that payload when he say so, what you betting on? Okay. Don't get mad at me on fantasy, break up Kyrie LeBron. I be smooth as sports superhero Hancock in the mix. Deal with roll tie forever, real talk, you know who he gon' pick. See where I be with SRT, behind the glass, that G-Money. Man, when it's strong, I never lose, six man elite. That's Jay Smooth.
Are you
other sports radio shows is fake news. Believe it. Turn up your radios, cause it's time for SRT Radio. Yeah.
What up, what up, what up? It's the Sports Roundtable. Second hour of the show. Happy New Year to everyone. First show of 2018. Me and Hancock said we're going to play that number tonight.
Yeah.
Tomorrow, the rest of the week, something. Thanks for tuning in for the first hour of the show. DW called in, gave us that Falcon report. D Will is up in the building.
Yep.
Helping us break down some of this college football. We left the first hour talking about some other news. They had a report about Belichick and Robert Kraft. Belichick wanted to kind of move on from Brady and get Jimmy G in for the future. Allegedly, Kraft tied his hand and
said no.
They had to move Jimmy G. Speculations are Belichick might walk away. And you already know that both of the coordinators are getting interviewed for jobs. Josh McDaniel and Matt Patricia.
Patricia, yeah.
Could this be the end if Belichick walks away?
Oh, it's the end. I mean, he's the linchpin. I mean, if he's gone, we've seen his assistants go elsewhere and nothing happened.
Right.
I mean, that's from Charlie Weiss to Uncle Grandpa looking
at Romeo Cornell.
Yeah, him. even Josh McDaniel when he went to Denver. I mean, he had a nice little run for a minute.
He drafted Tebow.
Yeah, well, so they got it. Yeah. So, I mean, these guys do go, but we don't see them do anything once they leave. So.
Right.
You know, I don't see him doing anything without him. He's the linchpin.
And you can tell there's a rift with the reports that's coming out with Belichick banning Brady's doctor from team facilities, banning players from seeing him.
Doctor with quotation marks.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Because I don't know if he's
snake oil.
Yeah, exactly. So you could tell it's a rift there, and it's not going to end well. You could tell because Brady's already 40, right? Belichick has been in New England, what, 16 years? Something like that?
18
years?
He got there the same year as Brady.
So it's probably about time. There's no more that he can accomplish there. If he still wants to coach, he still wants to be the guy, why not move on and go somewhere else?
But the biggest thing is when you see a quarterback of Garoppolo's talent and they basically give him away for nothing.
Yeah, they did.
You knew it was a little something more.
He had been trying to find that next Brady for years.
He got it. He had him.
And he had him. And he knew he had him.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So
I guess what he was doing was waiting on a sideline hit that was going to give a concussion, that was going to slide Garoppolo in there.
Exactly.
But it's hard.
Did he have to do it that way? Because.
Who wanted to be the guy, though, honestly?
To tell Brady,
you got to go. You got five.
Robert Kraft can't be the one to trade Tom Brady. You can't
can't do it.
That's trading LeBron James.
I was surprised to see if Belichick do it, though. I was surprised.
If Belichick would have done it. I mean, he
looked like
he traded Richard Seymour. He let Ty Law go. He let Lawyer Malloy go.
You're right.
He let Vince Wilfork go. These were all key players in them winning championships.
But
Brady was no exception. It looked like he was the exception for a long time, but if this report is true, Brady was no exception.
And we've always said that. We've always seen no one's safe with Bill Belichick.
Doesn't seem like
it. No one's safe ever.
I was shocked at it, though. I'm going to be honest with you.
And like you say, it's still reports. We don't know how true it is, what the actual story is, or what the backstory is. But where there's smoke, there's fire.
Yeah. Would T.O. get in this time? Has it lost its luster at this point?
Well, they've done what they wanted to do, which was discredit his acceptance into the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
He should have been the first ballot Hall of Famer.
Easy.
Nothing with no problem. Now, if they allow Randy Moss to get in with the first ballot, then all that you said about T.O. was nothing. It was bull. It was all smoke. Because Randy was traded. Randy was considered malcontent in some place.
Yeah.
He wasn't T.O., though.
Yeah, but he had some off the field.
Oh, yeah, he did, but he wasn't T.O.
Yeah, but, you know, pulling his pants down on national TV.
All that's on the field.
On the field, right.
You know what hurt T.O.? You know what T.O.'s problem is and the reason he didn't get in? Him doing sit-ups out there and what's the agent's name? Rosenhaus.
But that's
Rosenhaus.
That's better than a felony bumping a meter maid with a car?
Hey, well, you know, that wasn't on TV. It wasn't in front of We didn't
maybe,
see
maybe,
him
now
bump
I agree
them.
With you. It wasn't
we didn't
on TV.
See him bump the meter maid.
I agree. I agree with that point, but it's still a felony type situation.
Hey, man.
And I understand
people,
what you're saying.
Yeah, we seen people kill people and they come back.
I feel you. All I'm saying is it's bull.
Oh, yeah,
because
it is.
It was just a way to keep T.O. out. You know, his numbers are ridiculous, man.
And yeah, here's the other thing. Here's the other thing. We just spoke of it. Randy Moss is building a brand now. T.O. didn't go from player to TV to build that brand. He went from player to reality star to I'm broke to I'm doing this to all of the controversy. He didn't get to build his brand back up to him to be, now let's forget about that. Now he's this. We can praise this person and not that.
But let me ask you this before you go.
Okay.
Did Brett Favre have to wait? Do he have to wait?
He literally though. Wrong.
Brett Favre sent
pictures. He still got commercials.
He sent pictures of himself to
people. Oh, yeah.
He had a drug problem.
Yes.
He had all kind of issues with his marital life and everything.
All of it.
But none of these things are mentioned when they talk about these type of people.
And he still got Wrangler commercials.
And see, that's the issue that I got is that if T.O.'s doing sit-ups in the driveway, hinders him. All this other stuff, man, that's they don't even add up.
They just making up stuff. But to your point about Randy Moss had some folks to talk for him. Mm-hmm. He had Chris Carr as a mentor, which he had already turned into.
T.O. had Jerry Rice.
Yeah, but
how close are they?
He didn't listen to Jerry Rice.
Yeah.
Then
Jerry Rice is also not on TV every day. Like Chris Carter was.
Well, Shannon Sharp here. Shannon Sharp on TV every day, bumping him for him today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Shannon just got popular, though.
True, but everybody is so.
Yeah. Shannon just got popular.
Yeah, I agree.
If T.O. would have played in New England, probably had a better chance.
Oh, no doubt. So?
Because that's that image you get when you go. It's like you done cleaned up a little bit.
And I agree. I see where you're going. I agree. Randy Moss got cleaned up when he went to New England.
T.O. Black Ball, wrong paint job. I like that, cuz.
But y'all love the same. All right, man. Let's get finished with all that. G, let's go ahead and jump into this Sports Roundtable discussion.
The Roundtable Discussion.
What are we talking about?
Hit it!
Outcast, baby.
Ooh. Loving this beat tonight, G.
Yeah, yeah, Outcast mix, man.
Roundtable Discussion sponsored by Bobel Basketball. If you have a youngster, kids, 3 and up. He said 3 and up. It don't matter.
He got 2 year old.
You can dribble a basketball, it don't matter.
Oh, he said if you can pay attention.
If you can
pay attention. Yeah.
Please go to BobelBasketball.com. The best basketball trainer in the United States. Well, even overseas. International. 40 years of experience. Go down to Bobel. Go to BobelBasketball.com. Check him out. And he'll do you right. Mention SRT Sports Roundtable. Go ahead and get you that discount. College playoffs. Oklahoma, Georgia. First game. Awesome game. First half, I don't even think Oklahoma even had a third down until like, 3 minutes into the first quarter or first half.
Yeah, they were moving up and down the field at will.
Georgia couldn't catch a break as far as trying to stop the offense. And like I said, I knew Georgia would go gas him. They was going to gas him for yards after yards after yards. But what happened, Georgia was able to adjust even though you was giving Oklahoma the ball back. they weren't able to do nothing in the second half.
Right.
So, Han, go ahead and give me your breakdown of the game, what you thought and what you saw and things of that nature.
What I saw was what we always knew. The Big 12 does not play defense. And it was more evident on that day than any time we'd seen. We saw a power running game with Georgia. They were running up and down the field like they were the first people out to practice. They had 324 yards on 25 carries. They had two running backs that averaged over 10 yards. One averaged 16 in Sony Michelle, and the other averaged over 10 being Chubb. To me, watching the game, if I looked at these stats, these were the unexpected stats. Check this out. Time of possession, OU had the ball 32 minutes and 58 seconds. Georgia only had the ball 27 minutes. So if you looked at that, you would say, well, that doesn't bode well for Georgia because, you know, they would probably need to shorten the game, as we said.
Exactly.
But what helped them not shorten the game was 75-yard run touchdown, 65-yard, 44-yard runs, one- and two-play drives, which they didn't have the ball to, you know, take time off the clock. So those things, to me, just – they would – I just didn't believe it. Even in the rush in the passing game, Georgia had 210-yard passing, and Oklahoma only had 289 passing. You would think they had close to 400 yards passing, but they didn't. If we looked at the second half, Georgia made the adjustment to me by having two high safeties and bringing their corners up to get in the picture. And with that, to me, it made Baker Mayfield hesitant. As I was stating early in the show, he didn't throw in the tight windows. He would double clutch, hold the ball, and I think he got timid. I think it went back to the coaching staff. They got timid, especially in overtime and late in the game. They only scored, like I said, 10 points in the second half and overtime on offense. They had a defensive touchdown, which gave them 17 for the half, but they scored 31 in the first half. So to me, with the adjustments Georgia made, it kind of took Oklahoma a while, and they didn't figure out. They had one nice drive later on, but they couldn't adjust to making sure they threw underneath. This is what I was telling you is right. Make him have to be patient, and they did that in the second half. First half, he was just freewheeling, throwing where he wanted. SEC-style defense is the closest thing in college we have to NFL-style defenses. So to see him struggle in the second half, I was really impressed with what Kirby did. Kirby kind of reminded me a little of Nick making the adjustment and keeping them off the field. Good. They got them like three straight three and outs. They missed a field goal. I mean, I got a field goal blocked at the end. So I was just real impressed with what I saw from Georgia, you know, going against a high-powered offense like that. We'll see what happens next week. But like I said, until the Big 12 understands that you do have to have two sides of the ball, they're going to struggle against teams that play defense.
Now, before D-Will goes, a lot of it is they were just out of position.
Didn't know how to line up, huh?
The defense.
Didn't know how to line up?
Exactly. They just was out of position.
And they don't tackle well.
They don't tackle well, but you remember the Sony Michelle run?
Yeah.
When they changed the play?
Yeah. Sony saw it too.
Sony,
they were so hyper in the backfield.
Exactly.
Sony was like, "Do you believe this?"
Yeah, he said, "Hold on,
I'm going over here."
Yeah, I'm going over here. We're gonna run it this way. The linebacker went inside instead of filling the gap.
Well, they overloaded. They overloaded to the left side, and nobody came down to fill the hole.
Exactly.
Well, the safety came down. He just took a horrible.
Well, he stayed there. He didn't.
He didn't want them problems.
He didn't. So nobody adjusted in just the same play, like on the goal line when Chubb broke the off the goal line for 50 yards. Exactly. The linebacker saw something and just ran and left a gaping hole. He went straight to the left, and Chubb ran up, made a left turn, and went straight up the sideline.
He would have scored in two-hand touch.
But to show you what I'm talking about by not tackling, if you can remember, what's the wide receiver from Alabama? His brother plays for Georgia.
Ridley.
Oh, yeah, Cal.
Ridley made, on the play we were talking about, where Sony Michelle went down the right sideline, Ridley blocked the DB out of bounds. He couldn't even fight off the block. On the touchdown that won the game, the quarterback made the game. He Jake blocked Fromm. The corner. The corner didn't even try to get off the block.
Off a quarterback.
They're not physical.
So that's what I'm saying. They're The Big 12 is a joke on defense.
Now, I got one question for you before you go. Who's the defensive coordinator for Oklahoma?
Oh, Stoops.
Okay. All right, ooh, go
ahead. one of the Stoops.
Yeah, one of the Stoops. But I am going to reiterate something Han said. Georgia, the reason Georgia was able to contain Baker Mayfield, like you said earlier, they went to two high safeties. They were able to get pressure with 4 and 5 with just their defensive line or bringing one extra man, which really threw Baker off his spot.
Sure did.
All right? So that was the key to Georgia on defense. But in our breakdown last week of the games, we pinpointed a couple of points that we thought were keys to the game. Some of those points were we thought Georgia had to hold OU under 30 points. They didn't do that. Okay? Time of possession, as Han just pointed out, favored over OU. Okay? Big plays by UGA, which gave the ball back to Oklahoma, which Big H.O. pointed out last week in our breakdown. That hurt everything that we thought would hurt Georgia actually came to fruition for them. It helped them.
It helped.
All right? So, another thing we pointed out last week was if Georgia was able to not only run the ball to impose their will, but if Jake Fromm can make one or two plays, in that fourth quarter in overtime, Jake Fromm looked like a more than formidable quarterback. He made some throws that you look back and was like, whoa.
That rollout throw back across his body.
Back when he hit Sony Michel, when Sony Michel broke out. That was a great play because he was dead to water with an unblocked blitzer in his face. He made a little subtle, that's what we call pocket presence. He made a subtle step with his pocket presence, stepped up, looked back across his body and found Michel. So he made plays also that we thought we would see from Baker Mayfield.
Exactly.
Okay? So everything that we thought would happen that would be in Georgia's, not in Georgia's favor, actually turned around to be in their favor. A couple other things that I saw in the game was, I believe third down conversions were big also.
Look, and they out-converted them. We thought Georgia had to do it.
We thought Georgia had to do it. So they were able to control the game by running the football. We knew that was going to be the thing. But what we saw was, and we mentioned it a little earlier, the physicality is totally different from the Big 12 to the SEC.
Yep.
It's night and day. And with them being able to control the line of scrimmage, which we knew it would come down to, the trenches, and they control both lines of scrimmages. We're not just going to say because the defense was able to get pressure with four. That offensive line was pushing people 4 and 5 yards downfield, which opened up those holes for those running backs. Because you even saw when the young kid Swift came in, the holes were still huge.
Still open.
I don't know why. If you go back and watch the tape, OU played a lot of two deep safeties. Okay? They brought one up in the box and left one back. Why? Make Jake Fromm throw the ball over top. All right? You might want to take your cornerbacks, move them off 4 or 5 yards so you can move your safeties up. Now you can play zone or you can play man and make them beat you deep.
I think they got scared from the first play. You remember the first play Georgia ran was a fade stop to the wide receiver.
He threw it back shoulder.
Right. Yeah. And I think from then on, they was like, well, maybe they're going to throw the football. Mm-hmm. And I think it got in their head.
But that should have got in their head and be like, okay, if that's what y'all want to do, we're going to give you that all day. Go ahead and take that because we're not going to let Sony Michel, Nick Chubb, and Swift beat us because we understand if they get going, the ball game is over. Now, big plays by Oklahoma. I can't just poo-poo on them. They played a decent game.
First half.
Second, the end of the game, the second half, because that hit on Sony Michel where he fumbled and they picked it up and took it to the house, that was a great play. They had that play dead to rights. Mm-hmm. They should have been playing that style of defense the entire game because they stepped up on that play and didn't look like they were afraid to make a tackle. All right? It was, if you go back and watch that, it was 4 Oklahoma defenders around that football.
Like they knew what play was coming.
They knew what. So why didn't they play that way the entire game? You know what is coming. There's no way possible Sony Michel should break for 65. What? They had 5 touchdowns between them.
65, 44, 55, 50, and 27, something like that.
With 5 touchdowns. With 5 touchdowns. At some point, Lincoln Riley, we understand it's your first year. Your first year coach. We might give you a pass for that. But at some point, somebody on the staff, the head coach, somebody has to say, okay, we're going to put all our chips in the basket. We're going to put 9 in the box, and we're going to make Jake Fromm beat us. If he can beat us, we deserve to lose. But I'm going to tell you what they thought. They were cocky. They was like, okay, whatever happens, because obviously Georgia couldn't stop OU either.
In the first half.
Yeah, 204-yard rushing.
Hey, he threw for what? 230. He threw for Anderson ran for 204. He threw for 231 in the first half. Baker Mayfield did. But then they came out in the second half, and Kirby Smart was able to make the proper adjustments to shut down Baker Mayfield, put, like we said earlier, not to reiterate, put the two high safeties up and get pressure with the front four and maybe five if they want to bring one with the outside rushing.
Right.
That was the total difference in the game. Now, I will say this. That's an instant classic.
Yeah. I think the adjustment Kirby made was great, but I think he made it too late. If he would have made it, I don't think – like in the first half, Oklahoma had 360 yards of total offense. Second half, they got 171.
Mm-hmm.
So, see, the adjustment, you can see the drastic difference. We talk about almost 200 yards difference
right.
from the first to the second half.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the difference between he and Nick, and I'll be honest about that. Nick makes adjustments incrementally. He doesn't wait to the second half to do that. And I think that's one thing that Georgia in the coming years might do. But he waited until the second half and made that big adjustment, and it shut Oklahoma down. Like I said, you limited their offense to 10 points in the second half.
What, zero in the third quarter?
And in the first half, it looked like a track meet. It looked like they couldn't do anything with that team.
Exactly. Before we move on to the Clemson-Alabama game, one thing that I got to bring up. Oklahoma is up 7, 5 minutes to go in the game, and they have the ball.
Right.
The Heisman Trophy winner has the ball with 5 minutes left, and you up 7.
Right.
You got to finish.
I think that happened on both sides, though, Harris. Georgia came with a key stop, up by 7, with the ball at midfield, and didn't get any points out of that drive. And that's when Oklahoma got the ball back, went down, scored to tie the game, and then got the turnover the next drive. But I agree. You have to put them away. And I thought Georgia should have put them away earlier with a 2-score lead, and they didn't. But I agree with you. I think with that drive you're talking about, and also in overtime, you ran a reverse to a guy on a 3rd and 2.
One.
With a guy
yeah,
that,
third and two, yeah.
that hadn't been touching the ball.
3 carries, though.
That looked like and a Steve Sarkisian play call.
You took the ball out of the Heisman Trophy winner's hands. Let him make a play. That's what he's supposed to do, right?
Well, I'm saying your running back, Anderson, had 200 yards.
Yes.
Hand it to him and let him go get two.
I didn't understand that.
Yeah,
but
either.
They played to the, you know, they played down then. I don't know. I think, like I said, I think the coaching staff got shook.
Yeah. Well, they say he's only 34 years old, but, you know, hey. G, you wanted to ask
age
something?
Age means nothing.
Well, of course, I didn't watch this game.
Right.
But, I saw the end and look at the box score, like, it was...
You thought Oklahoma won, right?
Well, no. Like, look at the numbers with Michelle and Chubb.
Yeah.
It was like, man, they didn't have to... It was like they didn't have to throw the ball as much. Like y'all were saying, like, Oklahoma didn't make Jake Fromm
exactly.
beat them. And I was surprised that the run defense was so bad. I thought it would be the pass defense that would be pretty bad, but they ran all over them. And you don't ever see that to where running the ball gets you back in a game.
Yeah.
So I thought that was pretty
good. One play, two play drive.
Yeah. And I knew that was going to happen because they
And you,
they
we think you said you thought it was going to be a detriment. You thought it was going to be like,
But they didn't. They got the ball back, but they did nothing with it.
See, and the defense shut them down the second half.
That's what I'm saying.
You know, and looking at Georgia, we think that Fromm didn't throw it. He threw 29 times.
Yeah, he threw a lot of passes.
He had 20. He was 20 out of 29.
Yeah.
But that tells me what I'm talking about that defense, man. The Big 12, they'll be ashamed of themselves.
Yeah,
man.
It's bad.
It's like playing flag football, man.
They may not get in next year with that performance. All right, Clemson, Alabama. Total domination. I was very, very shocked and surprised. Clemson offense was non-existent. Just like Han said, Deshaun Watson was obviously
superhuman.
He was the man.
Covered all the ills.
Yes,
he did.
Yes.
I thought Clemson defense would put up a little more of a fight physically.
You don't think they did? They hit Alabama, man. I mean, the defense they played as well as they could play. The offense put them in bad spots twice.
Well,
I see where you're coming from, but they could have played better. For what that we were giving them, for the props that they were giving.
That's the best defensive line
in the country. You heard all the accolades people were saying. You expected them to play better. Because if you watch that game, Jalen Hurts missed four touchdowns. He missed four touchdowns. Wide open. The flea flicker, if he throws that out, that's a touchdown.
I agree with that one.
The one where he came back and he actually did find Calvin Ridley on – he had Calvin Ridley from the snap on the post. He had Robert Davis on the long – number one.
I don't remember that one.
He had him on a long bomb. He missed
it. I remember the Ridley one. I remember the flea flicker.
He missed four touchdowns.
Yeah, but the flea flicker to me is a trick play. But I'm talking about as far as them coming up and being physical. They played a physical style. To me, the defenses, to me, were comparable. But to me, Alabama showed, like I was saying all year, injuries was the problem with Alabama's
Period.
Defense.
We got healthy.
That was all this rhetoric about their defense, and that didn't do anything but fuel the fire. And I knew if they had those people back, it was going to be a problem.
Yep.
You know, I told everybody that I talked to, it was going to be a problem. And as far as Kelly Bryant is concerned, he is not that guy. I'm not going to say he's not that guy.
He's not Deshaun Watson.
That's what I mean. Yeah. He's not that guy. He's not accurate like that.
No.
He's athletic.
He's not elusive.
He might be a better runner than Watson.
A bigger runner.
Bigger and probably better than me. But as far as playmaker, Deshaun, it's something special about Deshaun. And we saw that. He could get hit. You beat him up. He going to get up, straighten his chin strap, and say, let's go again.
Right.
And this time I'll beat you on this play. And I didn't see that. Kelly Bryant took some wicked shots.
Yeah.
Alabama beat him up all night long. And that number 33 that you got at Alabama?
Yeah. Jennings.
Is he back for this week?
No, he's out.
Out for the week. He just came back, didn't he?
Yep.
That's a shame. That kid is special.
He missed games this year.
Evan's special.
Yeah, he 33 was making. He was the one that caused the interception.
He was. Anthony Jennings was out. I understand Jerron Payne had the interception with the big play, and then he had the touchdown catch. He had a good 5-minute span, which gave him the
look.
Anthony Jennings was the defensive player of the game. He should have got that trophy hands down.
He was
because
balled.
He was. Everywhere.
Yeah, he was bald.
He was everywhere.
It was a difference, but he popped off the screen.
Exactly. So, and I just want to reiterate what Han just said. It was health.
Yeah, no doubt.
If you go back and you go through Alabama's entire season, they were the number one defense in the country. Scoring defense, yards defense. They in three of the five top statistical categories on defense, Alabama was number one. And in the other ones, they were number three and number eight. So they were by far the best defensive team in the country. So we knew what they had on defense. And with a month to get healthy and a month to give Nick Saban to prepare, it was going to be very hard for Clemson without a Deshaun Watson to even compete in that game. Because, look, they did not score a touchdown. They didn't get it. They didn't see pay dirt one time.
They had 113 yards before the last drive.
In the fourth quarter. Yeah. So you saw that, and
it was domination.
Exactly. And you saw, I'm going to tell you like this. One person I don't think got enough credit for this, Rashawn Evans is one.
Yeah, 99.
No, that's Raekwon Davis.
Evans is
32.
32.
Davis?
Yeah, but he's 6'7", 308.
Oh, my
he's
God.
He's huge. Let me quick backstory about him real quick. Y'all know he's the one that got shot before the first game. So you know what kind of person he is. So if he want to be a dog, he could be a dog, all right? But Rashawn, our two inside linebackers, which that is where we were really hurting this year, okay? In the inside, once we lost Sean Dion Hamilton, we lost Dylan Mosley, who took over right before the Auburn game to play middle linebacker, but we got Mack Wilson back, a five-star. Rashawn Evans is back healthy. He had the bicep injury. So they got healthy, and those two guys are so athletic. If you watch them run sideline to sideline, what you want your inside linebackers able to do, you want your outside linebackers able to get pressure and hold up blocks, but you want your inside linebackers to be able to run sideline. Those guys are running sideline to sideline. And when they put it on you, they put it on you. The wood was being laid all night long, and I believe – midway through the third quarter, Clemson was like, I'm done. You saw it.
Yeah, I mean, once you know your offense can't do anything, your defense kind of saying, man, we tired.
Yeah, we tired.
We've held up as long as we could. Whatever, it just wasn't going to happen.
And then,
then number 94 is ridiculous.
De'Ron Payne.
He the biggest. He caught an interception and made a sidestep move.
Yeah.
Let him go by. When Heisman posed.
Yeah.
It was running. At 300, and they said 308. If he's 308, I'm 6'7".
Yeah, exactly. He every bit of 340.
Good God almighty. And then he gonna catch a, he went on a shallow motion across the backfield and catches a fade basically in the corner and gets both feet down.
He did the toe tap.
And he said they need to move me to receive in the interview.
That's crazy. He ain't gonna say, oh, I played a little tight end in high school.
That's
or
sick.
Sit down.
That's sick.
Yeah. But like I say, that's just
athletes, man.
That's one thing about Nick Saban. And we always known that for the last 8-10 years.
Give me the best players and I'll coach them up.
Thank you.
That's it.
Thank you. All right, so they asked me on Facebook, Georgia and Alabama, how it's gonna go down. What has to happen for Georgia to beat Alabama? Well, that was the question.
For Georgia to beat Alabama, they got to get Jalen Hurts to give him a couple balls and some short fields. I'm going to be honest with you. They got to make him see some go somewhere where he throws them a ball and they get a short field and possibly score some either defensive touchdown some kind of way or get a chance. I mean, don't get me wrong. Nick Chubb and Sony, if you miss them now, they can go to the house.
Right.
And it's going to be that type of game. I just think it's going to be low scoring. You want to stay in there to the end. Make sure you don't turn the ball over to Alabama. Because we saw what happened when Clemson was making a they were getting down the field. They turned the ball over. Now Alabama, quick change.
Yep.
So that's the thing about it. If you do get a chance to score, like Florida State took the lead on Alabama early. Remember in the first half, we were looking good. And gave up a big play to three.
Ridley.
Game changed. So I think they can play with them, but you can also see that the athlete level isn't quite on par.
The depth's not there.
Yeah, it's not quite that. Georgia's got a good first line. In a few years, if he keeps recruiting the way he's doing over here, Georgia, it's going to be a game.
That gap's going to close.
Yeah, but right now, the athletes just look different on Alabama.
I think the special teams could come into play. Hardeman to get him.
Yeah, he's legit.
To get him to give George a good field position and to keep them out of bad field position as far as, you know, him returning and things of that nature. They gotta get Alabama to kick. Nick never had a kick.
They gotta get some short fields too.
Nick never had a kicker.
So place kicker, because our punter is great.
Yeah, place kicker. If they can get them to kick field goals, keep them in third and long and things of that nature, I think you have a chance. You know, that's staying in the game.
Mm-hmm.
But if it comes down to depth, you know, and the water nutrition, you know, fourth quarter, who still has it, who's in better shape,
right.
The trenches, that's going to tell the tale, I think.
Let's be honest, man. Let's keep it real. We can put our analytical hats on and show y'all how smart we are and how great we are at Sports Talk Radio and how good we study and all the different things. We can be talking heads, is basically what I'm saying. But we're gonna keep it real. Georgia don't have a chance in hell in beating Alabama. Because we said last week that Clemson was mirror images of Alabama, and we saw what happened. Georgia is a clone of Alabama. What does Georgia want to do? They want to run the football. They want to beat you up in the trenches. They want to play solid defense. They want to run the football. Jalen Hurts does not turn the ball over. He had the one fumble on the misread exchange with him and with him and Harris, but that was just him reading the end too long. He pulled it a little late. But Jalen Hurts, if you go back and watch it, the kid has like 14 turnovers in his career.
And that's what I'm saying.
He's not going to give you the football.
To give you one.
And the reason I said he missed 4 touchdowns, you know why he missed them? Because he's not going to pull the trigger if he doesn't feel comfortable with it. Because he knows he has that backup plan that I can get out of there if I need be. So he's not going to fit it into tight windows. He's not going to take chances. We're going to run the ball consistently. Maybe a little bit too much with him, but they did hand it off to the running backs. But I believe if they give the ball to 34, I am not.
They got to get it.
I am not sold on Bo Scarborough right now. Okay? Bo Scarborough had 12 carries for 24 yards.
He running lateral. He won't turn up.
He will not. And he's the biggest back in the world. And you saw him. He delivered one blow in the first half on a run. At the end, he only got 2 yards on the carry, but he delivered the blow. I was like, okay, Bo is ready. And then all of a sudden, he started doing the Derrick Henry. If he doesn't get going downfield, you touch him, he's going down. So I believe we. And even if you
why
don't.
Why is 22 not playing?
Najee Harris. That's
I'm
exactly
you
where.
That. Why is he not playing?
I was going there next. Najee Harris does not get enough touches either. Now, they do use him as a pass catcher out of the backfield, but we don't throw our backs often unless it's Bo Scarborough. So I believe in this game, we need to establish the run. Alabama needs to establish the run with Harris, 34, and with Najee, with both Harrises, 34 and 22. Give those guys the ball and let them dictate the momentum and the pace of the game. And then now you can run Calvin Ridley deep. Now you can run Robert Foster across the middle. Now you can look for Bo Scarborough coming out of the backfield. Let those guys do what they do, because if they try to play a game with Georgia, you're going to let them stick around. We saw the Georgia, and I said this last week, Georgia can score points. We've seen that all season long. Yeah. And they put up 54 points this past weekend. So you know they can score. So if you allow them to hang around and let them think they have a chance, it's going to be problems.
But this to me is another key. If Alabama can't get pressure with just the fronts, and they do have to bring a safety down or whatever to help stop the run, the one-on-one outside, are we talking six? Wims is a beast. He doesn't get the accolades or the credit. But he can win 50-50 balls. I've seen him do it all year. And I would attack outside the numbers where it's an incomplete pass or a catch.
You better throw a Jonathan Wallace. Don't throw an Avery. I feel you.
Whatever matchup I can get, one-on-one, I got to go at it. Because I don't think I'm going to be able to consistently run. I don't think you abandon it, though. I think you got to keep running at Alabama. You got to. With three backs, nobody's going to get tired because you got three backs to use.
Three real backs.
Right. So they're going to get a dose of that. And if I'm Kirby, I'm trying to get it to the fourth quarter.
You know what you got to do? And I believe Georgia really needs to do this. It's going to be a key for Georgia. You're going to see a lot of wild dog out of them.
AKA
the Wildcat. Because you need that extra blocker. You're going to need that because you're not going to be able to consistently run power against Alabama. You're not going to be able to do it with that up front. With that front four plus those linebackers, you're not going to be able to consistently just turn around.
Do you think they're going to be able to do that against Georgia? Run the ball on them?
Not consistently.
Why I think it's going to be an LSU-Alabama type game.
And I'm going to tell you, it's going to be ugly for people outside
the SEC.
They're not going to like this.
They ain't going to like it.
All right, we're going to take a one-minute break, man. Come back. We'll go give our picks for the NFL Wild Card Weekend, and we're going to wrap things up. You listen to SRTRadio.com on AM 1100.
Keep those ears locked to Sports Roundtable on the Worldwide Radio Network. Basketball season is already underway, and even though you're playing, you want to take your game to the next level. That's where the Bo Bell Basketball Academy comes in. For boys and girls ages 6 and up, Atlanta's own Bo Bell has played and coached basketball all around the world and is here to share his philosophies to help any player maximize their potential. Visit CoachBoBell.com for details about upcoming camps or call 770-912-4104 for more information. Bo Bell Basketball Academy. Maximize your true potential. Sports Roundtable.
My bus is a crash grabber.
No!
I got to give it to him. Not Trump.
I know.
I'm talking about Baker Mayfield this time. Not Donald.
Oh, my God. He said it's okay, though.
Yeah, I wasn't talking about Donnie Suge Knight. Because he run the government like death row. He running the United States like death row.
Only on 1100 AM, the Worldwide Radio Network.
Sports Roundtable back at you. H.O., sports superhero. D-Will, the coach.
Yep.
G-Money behind the glass dropping. A little Outkast. He been bumping all night tonight. All right, Wild Card Weekend. First game, Titans and the Chiefs. Real quick, who y'all liking that one?
I'll go first. I like the Chiefs. They have been playing. They started off the season red hot, 5-0, and then they slid back. They lost a couple in a row, and then they were just back and forth. But I like Tennessee. Didn't show me much all year. They backdoored their way into the playoffs. They needed help and got the help they needed even to get in.
Right.
And I trust Alex Smith a lot more than I trust Marcus Mariota, because I saw a stat today in the aforementioned Deshaun Watson. Deshaun Watson had 19 touchdowns in 7 games. Marcus Mariota has 19 touchdowns on the season.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm with KC, man. I think the coaching edge goes to Andy Reid. You know, definitely the quarterback. And I just think that they had a more explosive offense. The only way to me Titans have a chance to win is if Derrick Henry has one of those games where he's just beating up the defense and kind of shortens the game, and Tennessee kind of with a suck up field goal at the end wins it.
Right.
Something like that. But I'd take KC. I think KC at least a touchdown.
Tennessee probably going to fire their coach anyway.
Yeah.
All right, Falcons and Rams.
Well, in this one, we got the explosive offense of the Rams, but like I said, the inexperience at quarterback gives it to me the Falcons the edge at the quarterback position. I think the Falcons have enough firepower if they come to play. I mean, the play calling and the offense coordinator have always been in question this year, so we haven't seen that mesh. But like we said, it just needed to get in it. Quick fact. Atlanta's offense ranks eighth in the NFL this year.
Yeah.
And the Rams offense, being as explosive as they are, they were 10. So actually the Falcons ranked higher, which was something I really didn't expect. Even the defense, the Falcons defense.
Is 10th.
And they only gave up 19 points a game. The Rams actually gave up 20, but still they were ahead of the Rams.
And the Rams give up a lot of yards on – they give up – they 27th in rush.
Exactly. Yeah. So the key is going to be limit Gurley. Go ahead and make him not be a factor if you can, and make Goff throw the football.
Okay.
And I got Atlanta also, and they won lower the action 28th. Against the Rams. Against the run. So and that's what Atlanta needs to do. A couple keys I think to the game is the reason I got Atlanta is simply on experience. Point blank on experience. Goff is just a second year quarterback. The head coach is just a
McVay.
First year head coach. He's only 31 years old. Matt Ryan's 32, so he's younger than Matt Ryan. So I just believe this is and with the Rams being down for so many years and them just now getting back into the facts of winning, even though it's a home game and they probably won't even sell out this game because it's probably going to be halfway empty because nobody comes to support the Rams, I believe it's going to be probably just as many Falcons fans in the stands as it is going to be Rams fans. So based off experience, I'm going to give the edge to Atlanta. But if they're unable to maintain and contain Todd Gurley, it could be a long day.
Yeah. All right. The Bills, you talking about moonwalking into the playoffs?
Woo!
I know everybody in Baltimore.
Yeah.
And they got they donated $150,000
to Andy Dalton's charity.
Yeah. Oh yeah, and they gave him free buffalo wings for life.
Yeah. Wow. Red Rifle got him in.
There it is. So I mean, Buffalo and the Jags.
This game is the Jags defense is all they have. It is what it is. Bortles, people were talking about him turning the corner and all, and I even got into a little bit, not get into it, but D and G-Money and I talked about whether they could hire Bortles. I don't think there's enough invisibility in the world to hire Bortles. You can't hide him. I agree with you, G. You were right. Bortles is horrible. The problem with Buffalo is that Shady might not be able to go. We know he won't be 100%.
Yeah, we know he won't
be 100%. And he is like 30-something, 33% of their offense. Total offense, he accounts for that much. So you're going to put it all on Tyrod Taylor with really nothing at wide receiver. Calvin Benjamin, maybe, but they just don't have enough.
Is Clay playing the tight end?
Yeah, he's there. He's been back.
Okay. But they got Clay and O'Leary.
O'Leary, okay. Yeah, he's there. So they just don't have enough. I think they got, what's the fat running back used to be at Carolina?
Tolbert
and some fish, egg, and rice or something back there with him. But it's just going to be bad, man. This game, you know, it's going to be an ugly game.
Yeah, it's not going to be worth watching.
Right, and you just hope if you're Buffalo that you can score one, because I don't think Jacksonville can put up any points. Right, I mean, they maybe stumble.
All right, G, what you got?
I think the last time the Bills made the playoffs.
99?
Yeah, they played the Jags, and they won, I think. But oh, yeah,
so long ago.
I was 1 year removed from high school back then, so yeah, it's been very long time.
Been a while.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was last century. But yeah, the nation will see.
Big Six King.
That Blake Bortles is awful.
All right, D, what you got, the Jags or the Bills?
I'm going with Jacksonville, and I agree Blake Bortles is awful, but he has had flashes this year that he can play football. Mm-hmm. He had a three-week stretch where he looked formidable, where he really threw for he threw the ball. I think he had 8 touchdowns and 0 interceptions during that little 3-game span. Yes. So he was playing decent for a while this year, close to the end of the year, and then the last 2 games of the season, he reverted back to Blake Bortles. But that Jacksonville defense is legit.
Okay. They're going into this game on a 2-game losing streak.
They are, but because of Blake Bortles. But
no, they got exposed to San Francisco.
They did. Yeah,
Garoppolo. They got Garoppolo out there.
But what were they playing for at that moment also? They were already into the playoffs. San Francisco had nothing to play for. So I put a little bit of angst on that also. But that defense is legit. Tyrod Taylor has only thrown for 14 touchdowns this season, so we know he's not dynamic. He got benched for Peterman. Peterman threw his first 3 passes with pick sixes, so they had to put him back in. So I'm not sure where his and
he don't have anybody to throw to.
They went and got Kelvin Benjamin from Carolina, the big receiver. He can't throw either, though. So I understand he has nobody to throw it to, but if you can't, he Tim Tebow with melanin. He can run it, but he can't throw it. Like I said, he has 14 touchdowns on the season. So I'm not really trusting Tyrod Taylor much. So I'm going to give the edge to Jacksonville simply on the fact of defense and Buffalo is bad. Have they fired their coach yet? He will be fired soon.
As long as you playing against Blake Bortles, you got a chance.
So y'all that. Stop doing Blake like that,
Blake
man.
Bad, man.
So is it whoever scores first wins?
Look, man.
I feel like it's one of those games.
Blake could give him some on our. I'm telling you, they could turn the ball over. I'm telling you, and score.
They could.
You got some defense out there, Buffalo.
Saints, Panthers.
Woo! This one is. This game to me will be the best game of the weekend. You know, you got Cam and you got Breeze. The one thing about Cam.
Emotional.
He's emotional. And the thing about Cam is he has to play exceptional to me for their offense to click.
Ain't no doubt.
And with Breeze has now become that guy that distributes to Alvin Kamara, who is the most dangerous man in football. Mm-hmm. That special teams, offense, you name it. So, to me, on this game, I get an edge to New Orleans because they're playing at home. In that dome, I think it'll be rocking. And, you know, you just don't know what you're going to get with Cam. He like a box of chocolates.
Yes, I agree. Cam is way too emotional. That defense has holes in it. You can see that in the secondary. If you can get past Luke Kuechly and Thomas Davis, you got a chance to do some things. And that run game in New Orleans is just something else.
Yeah, it's
serious. It is something else. Mark Ingram, who his first couple of years, we were like, he was sharing carries a lot. But we were like, is he really an NFL running back? Is he a top-notch elite? And he showed this year.
Found his
way. He can ball. He can ball. And like Han just said, Alvin Kamara is the most dangerous man on the field. He is last year's Tyreek Hill, right, from Kansas City. Yeah. So I believe Carolina is going to have a real problem containing those two. And if they put too much emphasis on that, Drew Brees is still Drew
Still
Brees.
Can do it.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. He can still beat them. So if they try to shut down those two and they allow Drew Brees to beat them and Cam reverts back into Cam, they're going to have trouble.
All right, man. Well, let's go in for the show. And I want to remind everyone, if you missed the show tonight, we're back on 10 to 12 o'clock tomorrow.
Tomorrow.
So catch us on the dial, AM 1100, or you can catch us on the iHeart and the TuneIn app as well. So that's going to do it. It is cold outside.
Boy, right.
Super cold. We'll be back next week. Bo Bell will be in studio.
We're
talking NBA, man. So you already know how we do it. Appreciate D. Will for coming through, running them t-shirts up and down, man. And shout out to everybody on Facebook Live. Shout out to everybody who listens. Shout out to everybody who still rock with us 2018.
Shout out to the fam and everybody back home in Memphis, Tennessee, baby. Happy New Year.
Shout out to my mom and dad, and Happy New Year to our
to our tenants.
There you go.
To the tenants.
Hey, Happy New Year to all. Shout out to the wifey. Shout out to everybody who has supported Real Talk Tees here over the last 3 weeks. When I tell y'all things are booming right now, I've been sitting here right now, and I've gotten 3 orders during the show.
There you go.
I appreciate everybody supporting Real Talk Tees, baby. We're going to keep it moving.
You already know. Hey, if you don't like, you better learn to love it, because it's the best thing going today. And let's roll.
Boogie! I'm headed home, baby.
They call me Coach because I teach you how to ball.
It's your main man, H.O. from Bankhead. R.I.P. Moms, R.I.P. B.C. And if you love the show,
tell a friend.
And if you didn't,
humble yourself.
Then we out. Peace.